Welcome to Muffin Talk.
Yora, and welcome to Muffin Talk. This radio program is brought to you by the initiative Titipaunamu, Study and Joy. Once a week, I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, religions and beliefs, and the care of the earth. My guest today is Professor Peter Lynam. Welcome to our radio program, Peter.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Beata.
Dr. Peter Lynam is Professor Emeritus of History at Massey University in Auckland. He is a specialist in the religious history of New Zealand and noted for many articles, books, guest lectures, and his media presence. In 2019, he was made a member of the Order of New Zealand for services to religious history and the community. People say that Aotearoa New Zealand is a secular country. Some people say there's religion is not needed. Yet the question about religion, about one's religion, is part of the census that is carried out in the country every 5 years. Doesn't this show that religion is still considered a point of identification for many people here?
Well, in the first instance, yes, in a way it is true, because certainly it's been in the census, one of the very few countries where a religious question has formed a part of the census since the very beginning of the census. However, I have to say that there are those who think that it's a waste of time collecting this information. It's got no value for government planning from their point of view, and therefore it should be cut out because every question costs money. And the statistics department wants to save money. But I've certainly campaigned, and others have campaigned, to include it, because even though it is certainly true that today the majority of people effectively say they have no religion to record, and of course what they mean by that you could debate, nevertheless, it's quite significant among the migrants of New Zealand. That's where it's quite difficult to measure the diversity of the population. And the religion question gives us actually a very significant indication of diversity, and therefore it becomes a very valuable part of planning for example, hospitals, for example, schools, and other groups that need to bear in mind religious dimensions.
That's interesting. When was the first census? Is that 100 years ago?
It was in 1861.
Oh, 160 years.
Yeah, that's right. And then it got off to a more regular going in 1871.
But isn't that fascinating? Isn't that a time when migration was at a peak in New Zealand?
Yes, indeed. In fact, the figures for migration, 1874 figure was only exceeded in 2018, I think it was.
Wow. So that, yes, that shows at the beginning it was also important where the people came from with what religious identity.
Precisely, that's true.
There might have been more Christian than today, but...
Of course, yes. But then it really mattered what the distribution of, for example, Anglicans who saw themselves as the established Church of England and others, especially Catholics, what proportion they formed. And so those figures were pretty significant in debates about schooling, for example.
Oh. Are these still available? Can you go back in the history and check these statistics?
I've been working on a book for quite a long time, which is going to cover the way in which these figures have developed over the years. It's incredibly interesting. We can get into extremely detailed coverage of tiny little villages in New Zealand and look at the people in those days. They didn't mind if you kind of gave away. I mean, if you knew that there was one atheist in the community, you could just about work it out by looking at the detail provided in the census in those days.
Wow, that's fascinating. I think that would be really interesting. So if you're writing a book about that, we'll have to do another interview. That's great. because I think it's always good to see it in the context. It's like people forget sometimes that New Zealand started with it's an immigration country. Even the Maori immigrated. It's not as ancient as like some other countries in the world, where for thousands and thousands of years the certain peoples were there. In New Zealand,
yes, it really is
quite recent.
In some ways, it's the newest country of the world, because in fact there were no human inhabitants that we know of before about 1000 AD. So it's only 1,000 years of history.
That gives us also a chance to do things better.
Yeah, yes, I hope so, though. We look like repeating a lot of old world problems, I think.
Well, and now when we look about these the census, so in the years when the census is held in New Zealand, there's also a church survey that is carried out in the churches of the country. Peter, you've been involved in this survey. Can you tell us more about it?
Yes, this survey is not nearly as old as the census. It's only been going since 1997. But that does mean that since that time, we've had 7 surveys of the religious values of the country. Now, remember that the census question simply asks you, are you, now what's the term? The term is rather critical. What is your religion? State as specifically as possible. But it doesn't ask how much you practice this religion, and it may be that you practice it not at all. And so that's a lot of the reasons why the idea of a survey of churches would be very helpful, because it would be very helpful to know those who are actually engaged in the practice of their religion, and in particular attendees of churches, because we often assume that we know, you know, who people are. We look at a group of people and we think, oh, I know all about them. Actually, most of the time we don't know as much about them as we would think. And so a survey like this gives an opportunity to measure various aspects of the church's congregation. And secondly, various responses of the church's congregation to issues of values and their respect for the structures and patterns of the churches. So that's the idea behind the survey. Of course, it's voluntary to participate. We do not have the power that the government has to try and coerce people to answer the questions. And then even the government has a big problem with that and got, what was it? They were still at 88% of the population who answered the census last year, even though they can find the ones who don't.
How many didn't fill in? 12%?
12%.
Aye. And tell me, do you have the figures from the census? Do you compare them then with the numbers of people who are actually filling in the survey?
Yes. So we had 25,000 people who filled in the survey. Now, those were from a range of denominations, about, I think it was 12 denominations altogether. But remember, there's 100 denominations in New Zealand, some of them, and especially on the more Pentecostal side, took no part in the survey. So we don't have those figures, which is frustrating, because we would love to know how many of those people are actually attending church and the like. We're left in ignorance of that. Now, with the survey that's there, they were asked how many people ordinarily come to your church on a Sunday, which, mind you, doesn't tell you how many might come once a month rather than once a week. And then we can put that alongside the figures that did fill in the survey. So for the Catholic Diocese of Auckland, which is a pretty good example, because it had probably the highest proportion participating, I think the figures came out at about 5,500 people filled in the survey. But the estimate of total Catholic attendance in the Diocese of Auckland is over 30,000. So you can see that the proportion is about a fifth to a quarter of attendance in those cases. And it was more poorly done in other Catholic dioceses, though the very big one is Auckland. It's only a proportion of people filled in the survey, and we always have to reckon on that. Fortunately, as I've said, churches usually keep their own methods of reckoning their numbers. It's just they don't know who comprised the numbers. And so the survey you have to interpret the survey results against the attendance.
And do you think that it's a representative portion? Because if you have surveys, you might some people who are of a certain educational level, of a certain mother tongue, might be more represented than others. Is that possible?
Yes, indeed. Yes, I think that's almost certainly the case. I've been through in the Diocese of Auckland and looked at the level of filling out of the survey, and it is striking to me that in South Auckland, with the highest proportion of Pacifica peoples, that's the lowest response rate is from there. And it is interesting that we had the survey provided in several different languages, but there was very little uptake of the Samoan and Tongan translations, for example.
I know in my little church, which is one of the smallest parishes in the diocese, we had printouts in Samoan and Tongan, because otherwise they would not have filled in the form despite the availability online. And I know from some Koreans who were very happy to fill in things online, because that's where they were familiar with and they had their language. It also, I think it depends on how it's advertised within the parish. And if you can, as a community, fill it in, it's almost like in some systems where you have to have a whole company go into the election at the same time. So you make them all fill it in. Whereas if you leave it up to them, they might not see the good thing that comes out of the statistic.
Very much so. And so I've taken a look at the two parishes in Auckland that filled out the survey most solidly. So they are St. Joseph's and Takapuna, where 865 people filled out the survey out of a potential 1,200. And then East Coast Bays, where 460 out of 600 attendees filled in the parish. Now, I thought those were two very interesting cases. Those results are quite important in looking back at the whole figures of the whole to clarify if in some way something gets distorted, and you would expect some distortion. And I guess my generalization would be that the survey is less likely to be filled out by older people, by very young people, and by people whose first language is not English. I don't know whether my assumptions are right or wrong, but that's the sort of generalization I got. So I was very intrigued to look where there was a bit of pressure put on people to fill out the survey.
Yes.
And it was certainly true that the average age in those congregations came out a bit lower. So that might suggest that it was not so much old people not filling out the survey as young people not filling out the survey. Maybe young families, when they were distracted by children and things like that, could have all played a factor. So that had an effect. I think actually I've got online right this very moment the results for St. Joseph's Takapuna, and the median age there ended out at 49, whereas the overall age for the Catholic parishes all over New Zealand, well, there were two different ages. There was a median age of 68 for Europeans and 49 for the overseas born. Actually, it's quite intriguing, because at East Coast Bays, of that parish, of the 460 who filled out the survey, 71% were not born in New Zealand. 14% Filipinos, 8% Indians, 8% Korean, 7% South African. And I thought that was really quite interesting and bears quite a strong resemblance to what we know of the nominal Catholic population in that part of Auckland. On that, at the moment, all I've got to go on is the 2018 census. But I, because I'm crazy, have collected the census figures broken down by ethnicity and age in every part of New Zealand. And so I can say pretty confidently, well, the group that's most missing in these Catholic parishes, there are a lot more nominal Catholics who are not showing up in the returns. So I assume that many, many more migrants are coming to church, and that there is a bit of, what shall we call it, white flight or Pākehā flight of non-attendance at parishes. This will be partly because they're older, but it does show something quite significant, because this is a big issue in Anglican and Presbyterian world, where a lot of people, you know, don't go to church that often. But it is also, I think, quite a discernible pattern today among Catholics born in New Zealand.
I think it would be interesting to see statistics from Easter, from the Easter celebrations, where the churches were bursting.
Yes,
and,
yes.
You had yes. 300 to 500 people per service.
Yes.
And if you could get all of them fill in a form, wouldn't it be wonderful? But I think that they would not be happy to fill in forms on Easter.
They will not be filling in a form. I'm quite sure they will not be. Yes, that's right. So what we've got going on, you know, really quite significantly in New Zealand, is that the active congregations of New Zealand, in terms of people born in New Zealand, they are much older than the average community. And that's true if we look at Catholics, Anglicans, Baptists, you know, the full range, that significantly congregations are aging, and that the regeneration of those congregations is mostly happening through migrants. Mm. And so migrants become critical for the future of religion in New Zealand. And in that case, Catholics are doing vastly better than almost every other denomination, because mostly because of the Filipinos, but also because of Indians and Koreans as well are a significant aspect.
I think that Koreans are on the North Shore. Koreans are certainly significant. When you look at parishes in South Auckland, as you mentioned, the Pacifica groups are really strong, but you don't yes. know how the next generation will be, because this is the generation that was still, many of them were born in Samoa or in Tonga or in other parts of the Pacific Islands and came with that tradition. The question is, what's going to happen with the young ones who are now in the second generation, more or less New Zealanders?
And there is a bit of evidence already suggesting that there's a religious dropout rate happening for the second generation or even the third generation. And quite clearly, I mean, it's very evident in that the very strong Pacifica congregationalists from Samoa are now showing signs of aging as groups. And it could be that there's been a bit of redistribution of these into more Pentecostal types of yeah. church. Obviously, you can't watch individuals, but you can look at the proportion of Pacifica forming a very significant share of the Pentecostals in terms of nominal. Alas, we don't have any other data on them because they didn't fill out the surveys.
You mentioned earlier that there were about 100 different Christian denominations in New Zealand. What about the Latter-day Saints? Are they considered as part of the Christian community in this number?
They are by the census, but they're not by the Church Life Survey. They didn't participate in the survey. I happen to know a lot about Latter-day Saints figures because I wrote an article for a recent book that was produced about the Latter-day Saints. The Latter-day Saints are a very curious case indeed, because they're the only denomination in New Zealand that was a majority Māori for many years. They were mostly rejected by Pākehā when they first arrived in New Zealand in the late 19th century. They flourished among Māori groups that were, for various reasons, embittered at the way they'd been treated by European governments and by European churches. So until the 1960s or 70s, they were predominantly a Māori group with a very tiny proportion of Europeans. And then at the very time when everybody else was discovering the need to provide something in Māori, Māori was banned as a language of worship by the Latter-day Saints. They were trying to create a more international church. They felt that the Māori Latter-day Saints weren't good Mormons, and they wanted to make them into good Mormons. So there were these changes of policy. And although those policies have shifted now, though there's only one Mormon congregation that is entirely in Māori language, and that's in Kaitaia. Mm. But the result is that today, the dominant type of ethnicity of Latter-day Saints actually attending is Polynesian, but not Maori. Latter-day Saints have done very well in Tonga and Samoa, mostly by the high quality of education that they provide and the opportunities for sports scholarships and the like. And so they flourished. But Maori, the census shows, this is most intriguing, in most denomination, the number of known people who've got a connection with the church, if you measured it by the number of people who are baptized, would still be much smaller than the proportion of nominals that there were from the census. In the Latter-day Saints, it's exactly the opposite way around. The Latter-day Saints proudly proclaim that they have 115,000 people baptized into the Latter-day Saints. But of those 115,000, the census only indicates that there were 52,000 of them who were actually in any connection with the church. And I mean, that's a very vague connection because it's just being nominal.
But Peter, with the Latter-day Saints, don't they also baptize your ancestors?
Yes, but those are not counted in those figures. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Although your ancestors may be baptized, you can't be put on the roll if you're dead. Okay. Indeed, you're taken off the roll if you're dead. What we see with the case of the Latter-day Saints, probably the attendance of Latter-day Saints Maori is probably about 30 to 50% of nominal Latter-day Saints, and of double that number have dropped out of the church completely and want nothing more to do with it. So that's quite an interesting story.
How are the results from other churches? We've talked about the Catholic Church a bit, but what about the others? You say that they are in general older?
Yes. So if you look at the Anglicans, Presbyterians, Methodists, and those that are in a church that combines them, often called a united or uniting church, the average age of people in those four of the old sort of traditional church, Protestant churches, shows extreme decline through age. So the average age of Methodists, and remember that there are a lot of Methodist Pacifica people, but they're underrepresented in the survey, but it shows their figures at about average age 71. In the United Congregations, 74. In Anglicans, 68. The same in Presbyterians. Now, again, Presbyterians and Methodists do have Pacifica membership, which may not have participated in the survey as much. The figures that we've got for those that did participate do suggest that it's only older Pacifica people who are very active in their congregations. And the nice thing about the survey is we can track how active they were, because it asks, were they involved in any other groups in the church other than just turning up on Sunday? And how often did they turn up on Sunday? The figures show pretty clearly that the old tradition of Anglicans and Presbyterians was that you went to church at Easter and Christmas, and only the real faithful went more regularly. That's changing, you know. More and more, the Anglican and Presbyterian churches look like small gathered congregations where a relatively small group of people, say for the average Anglican parish, is probably about 50 or 60 people, or maybe 100. But I mean, very small. And they have to find the money to sort of pay for a full-time minister, to keep the church going, to pay for the increasing prices of insurance and all of the things that trouble congregations. So this is a big struggle, and it's pretty clear from these figures that they're going to have to contract in the number of, they can't run that many parishes anymore. They simply can't afford to. But it must be said, they are very devoted in their support. It's quite striking to me the number of Anglican and Presbyterian churches kept alive by people over the age of 70 who are running community services, who are doing this, that, and the other, and who are giving more than 10% of their income, and that's a retired income, to the church. Whereas I'd have to say Catholics are way down at the bottom level of giving. Giving small amounts at best to the congregation.
Maybe that's one of the things, show them where it leads to, like with the census. Look, if the census is not filled in, we won't get the government support to fund our hospital. So maybe to show the reason and to get the Pacifica leaders involved, that might help So
it might have. One of the real problems for Pacifica people in particular is they are endlessly surveyed on everything under the sun. I know a bit about this because I'm the chair of the ethics committee at AUT University. I'm not from AUT University, but I'm the independent chair of the ethics. And we see so many research proposals that are surveying the Pacifica population, and they struggle to get people willing to fill out their forms because, you know, every week they could probably just keep themselves active filling out surveys. So there's that. Now, there's another group that I haven't talked about yet, which is the more active and evangelical, charismatic type Protestants. And so there was a big level of Baptist participation in the survey, and also quite a lot from the Salvation Army, from some of the other smaller or breakaway churches. And they had higher levels of participation, and they again show high levels of activity. Average size of their congregations is a bit larger these days than Anglicans or Presbyterians in terms of active members. So Baptists would have an average active membership of 80 to 100, still a lot smaller than Catholic parishes, but on the other hand, with a lot more resources and engagement by people in those parishes. It's interesting that the Christian scene today feels to me quite a bit different than it used to feel. So that, firstly, we're very aware of the migrants as a significant element in congregations. And secondly, we're very aware of what would once been considered fringe Protestants are now, in terms of active involvement in civic life, probably a great deal of the activity comes from these Baptists and other similar style faiths. Now, that's quite a change. It also means that the biggest congregation, almost in every case, is Catholic, and that the one-time Anglicans or Presbyterians, assuming that they were the dominant people who ought to be leading the interchurch functions, is that's no longer the case, really.
Well, the Catholics also have an obligation to go to Sunday services, so they're more likely to be caught on Sunday.
Oh, precisely. That's very true. And once they've done their obligation, that's where it ends, it seems.
I mean, I hope not.
Well, yeah, but it is very interesting in the survey that there were questions about financial giving. Of the churches surveyed, this is a summary by Father Merv Duffy at the Catholic Seminary. Catholics have the lowest level of giving, with just 5% giving 10% or more. The note that he adds is that low levels of commitment beyond Mass are more common for new migrants who are understandably preoccupied with settling into New Zealand. It makes quite a lot of sense. So that it's an observable phenomenon, I think, of especially Filipinos who love to come to church and meet their Filipino friends, attend Mass, and then head out the door straight away to head off to have a meal with one another. So their engagement is to some extent with the church, but the church is partly a way to meet other Filipinos. And it's probably true with Koreans a bit as well, from the responses that I've seen.
Certainly, because there's also a language barrier, because a lot of new migrants from Korea are struggling with the language. And so it takes a while until they can really mingle with the rest of the
world. Very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Thank you very much, Peter. I think that we could go on for a long time. And I'm looking forward to your historic book about the past surveys and to see how things have changed. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you, Beata.
And just a quick information about the events that are coming up in Titipona Mu Study and Joy. Well, we have our monthly sessions on the first Sundays of the month about Bible stories. What do they mean? Join us in unraveling Bible stories and looking for answers within a group and with Bible scholar Brother Kieran Finn. So this is every first Sunday of the month from 5 to 6 p.m. on Zoom. And then we have the mystery of miracles. Even though the series has already started, you're welcome to join at any time. These are four parts, always on Mondays during the month of April, 7 to 8:30 p.m. on Zoom. Each gospel tells miracle stories, and we'll hear more about it with Brother Kieran Fenn. So for any further information and registration, please check out my website at www.studyjoy.nz. Kaha, keep safe, and thank you very much.